Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. Edwardine Forbaugh is an ex-friend of Amy Miller versus Aetna Life Insurance Company from Lubbock County. George J. Barr versus the Resolution Trust Corporation from Dallas County, and Richard W. Lee and others versus the Honorable Dan Downey on original mandamus proceeding. In each of these arguments, times have been allotted to the petitioner or relator and the respondent, and the petitioner or relator has the option of reserving a specified portion of time to present rebuttal argument if counsel so desires. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these arguments, and we will complete the submission of all three cases before our noon break. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. Anyone that desires to hear a tape of the argument may make application with our clerks. The court is now ready to hear argument from petitioner in Forbaugh versus Aetna Life.
May it please the court, Mr. Alton Griffin and Mr. Chuck Lord will present arguments to the petitioner. Mr. Griffin will open, and Mr. Lord has reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I am Alton Griffin. I do represent Edwardine Forbaugh and her daughter, Amy Miller, in this cause. I want to take just a couple of minutes to acclimatize myself to this court. It is my first time in court. I have appeared in other courts over the state, including the Court of Criminal Appeals many times, but this is my first time before the Supreme Court, and I hope that you will give me just a little bit of leeway, even though my time is short, to acclimatize myself to what I'm doing. I'd like to talk just a few moments about the background of this case, because I think that it is important to keep it in the context that it occurred and the sequence of events that have occurred insofar as the case itself is concerned, and then the law that we believe applies to it. In 1983, on March the 13th of 1983, a young girl named Amy Miller was injured very, very seriously as a result of a collision on a roadway with an automobile or a pickup truck pulling a trailer. She received very serious brain damage from this, and as a result of it, since that time has been a spastic mute quadriplegic, the only communication being the expression or the blinking of eyes and acknowledging is said to her. She is aware of things. She can, for example, watch television, things of this nature, and it has been said that, and I believe her mother testified to it, that you could tell that she was aware of what her surroundings were, because just in watching her watch television in a sad thing on a thing, you could see teardrops form in her eyes. You could see a light or happy expression in her eyes when it was a funny situation. But this has been the existence of Amy Miller since March the 13th of 1983. 2 years prior to the time that the group insurance policy under which she was insured was canceled. Now, at the time that she was injured, Amy, mother and father at that time had been divorced previously, but she was retained as a dependent on her father's insurance. He was an independent grocer in the city of Canadian in the very north part of the Panhandle, and belonged as a co-op member to Affiliated Foods, which is a co-op situation in Amarillo, Texas. There are a number of them around, but this particular one is located in Amarillo. And as a result of being an independent grocer, Affiliated Foods had gone into contract with Aetna Insurance Company for a group policy for their own employees, their warehouse employees, their salesmen, whatever employees that Affiliated itself had. and had made arrangements with Aetna that independent grocers, at their own choice, at their own option, and at their own expense, with no input at all from affiliated, could also come under the group. Mike Miller, the father of Amy Miller, chose to do so and became a member of the group and had Amy as well as his other two daughters by the marriage to Edwardine Fulbaugh under the group itself. When Amy was injured, she had many months of intensive care in Lubbock Hospital, and because that was the nearest major medical center that there was, insofar as she was concerned. At the time that she was injured, she was living in the little town of Roaring Springs, which is about 75 miles from Lubbock. A part of the group insurance that was carried was coverage, which was termed under the comprehensive section of the policy. The insurance policy, the group policy, had benefits of life insurance, it had benefits of disability payment, dismemberment payments, and it also had a medical coverage section of it that we say is the part that Amy was entitled to continue to receive coverage from. In 1985, or at least culminating in 1985, Affiliated Foods had made the determination that they were going to become self-insured, and they gave notice to Aetna that they were going to cancel a policy or to go into self-insurance themselves, and did so in 1985. At that time, Aetna notified all of the group policy members of the co-op time that they were to be canceled out. But they told Mike Miller, the representative from Aetna that talked to him, told him that Amy would be extended benefits for one more year and that after that there would be no more payments. This is a very important matter insofar as the coverage is concerned, because we consider that this was a repudiation of the insurance contract by Aetna and was the reason that no more incurred charge bills were sent to them after the cancellation date and the extension of benefits date, which was April the 30th of 1986. The position that Amy takes and her mother takes is that there was a section in the policy that we have before you here that says if any benefit ceases to apply to an individual or a dependent, coverage for that benefit will cease immediately for that person, but without prejudice to any rights under the benefit established by the person while the coverage was in force. We submit to you that Amy Miller was covered at the time that the injury occurred and that it applied to her. After the extension of benefits, which was for all purposes, it was not limited just to the injuries that she had received in this accident, but for all purposes, her insurance was extended for a year until April the 30th of 1986. That this, when it is taken literally as it says, that her benefits for the injury that she had received, the right under the benefit that was established while the coverage was in force, continues on. Nothing else, no more coverage, nothing else, but that does. This was the way that Mike Miller interpreted the contract, and that's what he believed he was buying when he entered into this.
How long does it continue? An infinitum? Is there any closure? Is there any end?
Sir?
How long does the coverage extend after cancellation?
This policy was an unlimited policy, either by time or by money. It was unlimited. It had no time limit to it.
To the end of the world?
No, sir. Not to the end of the world.
To the end of what?
To the end of the time that Amy required care.
Till her death?
Till her death, yes.
And you used that term, unlimited. Is that, that's a term that's used in the policy?
It is in the policy itself. And
does
it
that
is,
have significance to you?
Yes, it does. It has a significance to me that there was no limit to it. In fact, the Aetna representative testified at the court, and the question was asked her, well, what if there had been a $250,000 limit? Would the non-payment of the coverage make any difference? And she testified, no. It would go on until the time that the $250,000 was used up.
Well, you're referring to the direct testimony of the
representative of Aetna Insurance,
of Aetna,
yes.
That with a different type of Aetna policy that had a different only in the sense that it had an absolute dollar cap on the amount of benefits.
Right.
That it was a policy that was really an accident policy rather than an occurrence of expense policy.
Well, our position is that this is an accident and health policy, not a medical expense policy. The policy itself is entitled accident health or life accident and health policy. All of the benefits that are scheduled come under the sections that apply to accident and health. Part of it is for payment of incurred expenses, yes. I see that my time has expired, and I do thank you for your attention, and Mr. Lord will continue in our position. Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeffrey Jones will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Jones, and together with my partner, John Levick, we represent Aetna Life Insurance Company in this matter. The court has granted writ on this case to determine whether or not this insurance policy that's in question in this case provides, I believe, accident coverage or provides medical expense coverage. That, as I see it, is the key question in the case. Now, the plaintiffs, petitioners, have raised questions as to whether or not it should be against the public policy of the state to even allow a medical expense policy, such that on the happening of events such in this case, where a person is injured, they're incurring medical benefits, and the policy is terminated for one reason or another, whether or not a medical expense policy should be allowed to operate to cut off coverage in the future. Our position, as far as a public policy argument, is that the legislature has enacted voluminous amounts of statutes and regulations that govern group health insurance policies. They have provisions about what you can have in policies, about what you cannot have in those policies. And it seems like every year they put out new regulations and new statutes, further refining the contents of group health, health and life insurance policies. And the legislature has had many occasions in the past to take this action if they so choose, if they deemed it to be a public policy of the state that needed protecting. To say that no insurers in this state cannot write medical expense policies.
Within the confines of those statutes and regulations, Aetna still has a good bit of discretion about how it writes its policy, doesn't it?
They do have some discretion.
And in this particular policy, the term incurred charge is defined, is it not? And that's one of the things that the Court of Appeals looked at.
It is expressly defined in a definition section.
Is the term incurred charge, once defined, ever used in the policy?
Yes, it is.
Where?
Well, the entire term, I don't believe, is used. The term incurred is used.
the term incurred charge, which is the term defined, is never actually used in the policy, though, is it?
Not in a benefit section that's pertinent to this case.
And as far as benefits is concerned, that term is never defined in the policy, is it? It doesn't even get a definition.
Benefits?
Yes, sir.
I don't believe it does.
Mr. Jones, would the situation been different had Mr. Miller ceased paying premiums and the policy term, his policy been terminated as a result of non-payment premiums?
No, Your Honor. These benefits terminate upon termination of the coverage, at termination of the policy.
And so had the policy been terminated by Mr. Miller, by his ceasing to pay premiums, then the benefits would have been terminated too.
That's correct. And in effect, in this case, there's not much difference between Mr. Miller terminating the policy and the employer terminating the policy. In my view, Mr. Miller was an employer under the affiliated scheme. He's the one that chose to take out the policy under the affiliated scheme to provide coverage for his employees, which he was. He was an employee owner at the same time. And affiliated made the decision that they were going to cancel the policy. This was not Aetna's decision to cancel the policy. It was affiliated's decision because they wanted to move on to another insuring scheme, self-insurance, another group plan. They just felt like they could do something different to provide either better benefits or better costs one way or the other. And they left Aetna voluntarily.
Did Aetna offer Mr. Miller the opportunity to continue his policy even though the blanket policy had been canceled?
Under the terms of the policy that was in force, Mr. Miller and the other employees had a right to continuation under an individual policy.
And what did Mr. Miller do?
He opted to go with the new carrier. That was Safeco. A little background facts here. Aetna has an extension of benefits coverage in their policy that provides if a covered person or their dependent is totally disabled on the date a policy is terminated, then they will provide additional coverage for 1 year after termination date. That's mandated by the legislature. Or a three-month period is mandated by the legislature. They would not allow insurers to simply have policies canceled and leave people that are disabled without any coverage. So the legislature has mandated the three-month period. This policy had a 12-month period.
Now, are you saying that Mr. Miller had a right to pay an individual premium and keep aiming on this coverage as long as he paid the premium?
He was entitled to convert to an individual policy.
But did Aetna get to make a determination as to whether there were any exclusions there, or would Amy have been covered?
Amy would have been covered.
For this type of loss?
I don't know that her coverage would have been coextensive with the existing policy. Again, the legislature also governs and dictates terms of conversion policies. Those policies must be submitted to the state for approval. And their terms, conditions, the amount of benefits is subject to legislature approval.
And if Safeco had covered Amy, then of course the Aetna coverage would not have had to last a whole year. I mean, as I read this.
If they picked up the whole coverage that was giving her the same amount of coverage that the Aetna extension of benefits coverage did, then Aetna would have dropped out. If the Safeco coverage would have been any less than what Aetna was providing, then Aetna would have still provided some benefits for that year.
Which it clearly was.
That's right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So for that year, Aetna did pay benefits, received no premiums, performed under the extension of benefits clause, and then Safeco took over as the carrier for the affiliated group and began paying benefits on behalf of Aetna.
Do you know if the conversion policy benefits would have been equal to the group policy?
I've not seen a conversion policy. I don't believe that they would have been equal to the original group policy, though.
The Court of Appeals seems to have placed heavy reliance on the Riverside Insurance Company case in supporting your point of view that this was not a comprehensive accident policy, but was an incurred expense policy, expenses ending with termination. Isn't that case a decided minority point of view within the cases here in the state of Texas?
I don't think so at all.
Well, isn't it contrary to cases out of San Antonio, Houston, Austin, Dallas, and even Amarillo?
Many of those other cases that have decided this issue that have been cited by the petitioner have very strict policy provisions that provide disability insurance, that provide accident insurance. And the courts in each of those cases go off on the policy language. One cited extensively, I believe, has been the Drinkers case, in which there was coverage for a person if they contracted cancer and agreed to pay any expenses incurred for that cancer for 5 years after the diagnosis. Now, the lady contracted cancer, began receiving treatment, and while she was receiving treatment, the policy terminated. And the court said that does not cut off coverage because in the specific provision of the policy where you agree to pay benefits, you agree to pay benefits 4 or 5 years after the diagnosis. And so each of the cases talk about specific policy language that either makes it a disability policy, makes it an accident policy, or makes it a specific illness policy that provides a certain coverage for a certain period of time after diagnosis. And I think that's very distinguishable, surely, from this case and from the Riverside case.
This is a comprehensive medical expense benefits that are listed as unlimited in a group life and accident health insurance policy, isn't it?
That lumps a lot of coverages into one question. The coverage here in issue is the comprehensive medical expense benefits, which provides if covered medical expenses are incurred during a calendar year for treatment of a covered family member. In the definition portion of the policy, covered family member is defined to be a person for whom insurance is then in force. And I don't think that there can be any question but that after May 1, 1985, there was no insurance in force for Amy Miller other than through the extension of benefits. Now, the petitioner has placed reliance upon this provision here, which comes under a portion of the policy that deals with changes in benefits. Page 11 and 12 of the Statement of Facts. And it itself says what we are arguing. If any benefit ceases to apply to an individual or a dependent, coverage for that benefit will cease immediately. Coverage for that benefit will cease immediately. But without prejudice to any rights under the benefit established by the person while the coverage was in force. Now, our position is simply that a person does not establish rights under the policy, under a medical expense policy, an expense incurred policy, until they actually incur expenses. That is the only time that Aetna, in this case, assumes an obligation to pay benefits under this coverage.
Are you finished with your comment on it?
Yes, sir.
That's certainly a reasonable interpretation of the provision, but as you know, Amy advances another interpretation that the benefits vested while the coverage was in force, as used in that term, and that it is that right that cannot be prejudiced. Why isn't that at least a reasonable interpretation of that provision?
Amy, in her brief, admits the fact that this provision does not expand or create coverage or create any benefits. That it merely says that since this is an accident policy, her benefits vested on the date of the accident. And that this policy says since those rights vested on the date of the accident, this provision says that the cancellation is without prejudice to those rights. I think you still have to go back to an interpretation of the medical expense benefits provision to see if this is an accident policy or an expense incurred policy.
Does the legislature recognize this distinction?
It does, Your Honor, if I may.
And it allows you to name a policy what this one has been named and still be only a medical expense incurred policy.
In Article 3.51-6 of the Insurance Code, Section 1, Subsection D3, and this is talking about what must be contained in group health and accident policies, or accident health policies. That's what the legislature calls them. That's what Aetna calls it, an accident and health policy. Any insurer or group hospital service corporation subject to Chapter 20 Insurance Code who issues policies which provide hospital, surgical, or major medical expense insurance, or any combination of these coverages on an expense incurred basis, but not a policy which provides benefits for specified disease or for accident only. Right there, they make the distinction between expense incurred policies and specified illness accident policies. And it goes on to say, shall provide a conversion or group continuation privilege as required by this subsection. And that's exactly what Aetna did. It provides that when it's terminated, you must provide this continuation provision or conversion provision. And that's what Aetna did. They provided a conversion privilege. You could convert to an individual policy.
But there's nothing in that statute or any other that would prevent Aetna from defining the term benefit that it apparently used, looks like one, two, three, maybe one too many times, four times in that one clause, but didn't define anywhere in the policy.
Well, again, I think you have to go back to the basic insuring provision for medical expenses, where it provides for comprehensive medical expense benefits.
But
that
never,
is a benefit section.
But never defines what benefit is.
Specifically never defines what benefit is.
Why couldn't the term benefit, as used there in that without prejudice clause four times, mean a medical payment or service already being provided would not cease upon termination?
Well, again, I think you have to look back to what rights the person has under the policy. Do they have the right on the date of the accident to all medical procedures and expenses that may flow from that accident? Or do they have the right once they have incurred benefits? Is that when their right accrues? Once they have incurred, I'm sorry, a charge. Is that their right to then be compensated or reimbursed by Aetna or have Aetna pay the provider? Under an accident policy, your rights flow from the accident. Under a medical expense incurred policy, your rights flow from the incurring of expenses. And again, that's a distinction that the legislature has recognized. Not one that has just been created by Aetna. Not one that...
Well, given the rather fine lines and the possibility that just an ordinary person might not be as familiar with the statutes as the lawyers in this case are, shouldn't the burden be on the insurer to make that 100% explicit so no one can have any doubt that all they're getting is a policy that will cover them until the end of the year or whatever, and will not provide them coverage for whatever medical treatment they might require as the result of an accident that occurs during that year?
I think it is clear in the policy. I think when the policy says if covered medical expenses are incurred during a calendar year for treatment of a covered family member, and then the policy goes on to define those terms in the policy. I think once you read the policy as a whole, it is abundantly clear that Aetna is taking on the responsibility of only reimbursing for expenses as they are incurred. And if expenses are incurred after a policy terminates, then there is no coverage under the policy for that.
If there is the slightest ambiguity in the policy, the cases from this court and elsewhere are pretty clear, aren't they, that that should be construed, any ambiguity in favor of coverage?
If there is an ambiguity, and that ambiguity leads to a reasonable interpretation in favor of the insured, then it should be interpreted in favor of the insured. However, you have to find some policy. Once you find an ambiguity in this policy, I believe one has to then look to see if there are provisions in the policy that make it an accident policy under any construction. because that's what the plaintiffs have to show. The petitioners have to show that it is an accident policy, that that rights flow from the date of the accident and not the date expenses are incurred. And there is no language under the medical expense benefit section that would lead anyone to believe that this is an accident policy. Now, there are provisions under accidental death and dismemberment that provide for payments of benefits for accidental death and for accidental dismemberment.
Was the coverage of the Safeco policy that succeeded the Setna policy essentially coextensive, the coverage coextensive under the Safeco policy with that of the Aetna policy?
Essentially.
And that was a successor insurer to the group in which Amy was a member.
That's right.
And then they were also, did Safeco, does the record indicate that Safeco paid Amy's medical expenses as they were incurred during the period of its coverage?
They paid some medical expenses as they were incurred. A dispute arose between Safeco and Amy, which led to another lawsuit or another
and that has been settled.
Dispute, and that has been settled for payment of a lump sum dollar amount by Safeco in return for relief of any liability under that Safeco policy.
Did Safeco take the position, or is it, I want to know if it's in the record, did Safeco take the position that since the accident giving rise to those expenses had occurred prior to its policy's inception, that it was not responsible to pay those medical bills as they were incurred?
Safeco's position, I don't believe, is in the record. I don't believe that that was their position, though, Your Honor. I think basically the dispute was over the amount of benefits that they would pay and whether or not they were going to pay 24-hour nursing care. Just the dollar amounts of the coverage is what really got in dispute with the Safeco, not the fact of the coverage.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court, Mr. Chuck Ward, Representative Buttle for the petitioner.
May it please the Court. One point I want to make absolutely clear is that the Safeco policy was not a replacement for the Aetna policy. It is not our contention as well that the Aetna policy needed to continue for benefits to apply to Amy as to this injury. One benefit is all we claim. The specific benefit which established and was in place on April 30th, 1986, when Aetna's coverage ended, was for nursing care for Amy.
Do you contend that Amy was entitled to coverage under both policies during the existence of the Safeco coverage?
Yes, Your Honor. We do contend that there was dual coverage at that point in time.
One for which premiums were being paid at that time, which was a Safeco policy, and one for which premiums had been paid during the term of the Aetna policy.
No. The Aetna policy did not require the continued payment of premium to mature this benefit.
I understand your contention, but at the time the Safeco policy was in effect, presumably there were being payments made to Safeco at that time, but no longer being paid. Premiums were no longer being paid to Aetna.
That is correct.
Okay.
And the claims that were made against Safeco and the nursing care that was provided by Safeco goes to the amount of damages, I think, suffered under the Aetna policy, but nothing more. The Safeco policy really has no impact on our Aetna claim at all. It was an agreement reached with Safeco, a special arrangement between Mr. Miller and Safeco, that Safeco would cover Amy for a year only.
Does the fact that Mr. Miller's the group canceled the Aetna policy make any difference in this case?
Absolutely not. It does not matter who canceled the policy or why it was canceled. It was canceled by, I think the fact is that it was canceled by Affiliated, and it doesn't matter why it was, whether it was increasing premiums or because they couldn't afford the
the group policy?
If the policy had been purchased and the accident had occurred, let's say the policy had been in effect 1 week and the accident had occurred during that 1 week, your contention is that Amy's rights under the policy were vested for lifetime care?
No, we're not contending that her rights vested as to lifetime care. Our contention is that she was entitled to a benefit established under the policy under this clause that would continue past the termination or cessation of that particular benefit.
Perpetually?
Until she needed it. As long as she needed it.
Well, apparently her
the facts of this particular case are that she would probably need it
for the rest of her life.
For as long as she lived.
So if the policy had been in effect 1 week and the accident had occurred during the effective dates of the policy and then had been canceled a week later, then the benefits you contend would survive the cancellation of the policy as long as she needed it.
As to the benefit that we're arguing here, the nursing care, if she was receiving that nursing care on the date the policy was to be canceled and that benefit was to cease, under this clause, that benefit would continue and would be without prejudice to her claim.
And you don't see any reason under the laws of the state of Texas why if Aetna wanted to limit its responsibility in that regard, instead of providing unlimited coverage as part of the policy said it was doing, that it could have put an absolute dollar limit, as apparently it did with some of its other policies?
Certainly. They could have placed a limitation on the dollar amount, or they could have placed a limitation on the duration, I think. And we're not contending that Aetna cannot sell medical insurance. Our complaint in this case is they shouldn't sell limited medical insurance as an unlimited comprehensive medical benefit under an accident and health policy, which promises in its coverage section, in introducing the accident and health coverage, that it is for non-occupational disease and injury, and then they promise to pay a benefit and list the benefits, one of which is nursing care, which she was receiving on the date that the benefit was to cease to apply to her. We then are kicked into this provision, which says that benefit will continue as to Amy. Now, we've argued to the Court of Appeals that there is a difference between the termination of coverage and insurance, which deals with the general exclusion and termination provisions that the Court of Appeals apply to us, and the continuation of a benefit. This pertains to a benefit. The exclusion, termination, and extension of benefit clause extends the insurance generally. It's the entire bundle of rights that Amy had. So when her insurance, when the group terminated and she was, as a disabled person, entitled to another year's coverage, she had the entire bundle of rights. If she'd had cancer within that 1 year, she'd been covered. It wasn't simply to this one injury in the nursing care she was receiving at that point in time. But when that extension ended and the policy terminated as to Amy, she had nursing care, and she was entitled under this provision to continue that nursing care as long as it was medically necessary and reasonable for her to receive that.
What you said there, then, Mr. Lord, is that if she had developed cancer after this period of time, after the policy was canceled, she would not have been entitled to cancer benefits, but she would have still been entitled to the nursing care benefits that vested back during the life.
Well, that raises an interesting question. I'm telling the court that the extension of benefits continued the insurance generally. So had she suffered cancer...
So it's not just a continuation for incidents that occurred during the life of the policy, but it's just a general continuation of the whole coverage?
The extension
of benefits... the policy had expired.
Well, the policy hadn't expired. The extension
well,
of benefits... It didn't terminate. The extension of benefits was a 12-month period that extended the policy for an additional year as to Amy because of her special situation.
Well, let's put my fact situation a little more remote then. After the extended period, if she had developed cancer after the extended period, she would not have been entitled to cancer.
No, no, sir, she would not.
She would only been entitled to the benefits that were vested back during the life of the policy.
And in the fact of this case, that was one benefit that was established before the end of this policy, and that was nursing care.
Why don't you have to read this language with the extension of benefits clause?
I think you do read it with the extension of benefits clause. I read the extension to continue the insurance generally as to Amy. At that point in time, when the policy is then to terminate, and that's 12 months after the group terminated as to Amy, it terminates on April 30th, 1986. As to Amy, as to the group, the policy policy terminated April 30th, 1985. At that point in time, you look and see what her benefits were, what she was receiving under the policy. And you will see at that time that she was receiving nursing care being paid by Aetna on April 30th. Now, on May 1, Aetna says she was not entitled to that nursing care any longer.
But this, the term, the extension clause says any benefit provided only will continue to be available for expenses incurred while he continues to be totally disabled, but not beyond 12 months from the termination date. So the incurred language and concept is relatively clear in that extension clause.
Yes, it extends the incurred language in the policy and the general coverage in the policy. What we're claiming, though, is that the benefit that she was receiving at the time of termination in the nursing care was to continue, irrespective of what the incurred charge and how they wanted to limit the expenses during the term of the policy. The Court of Appeals was confounded by the difference between insurance and coverage generally and this benefit that was payable under the policy and should have been extended. We then cited the black letter rule, as we've referred to it in our brief, that says that under general accident policies that you continue your coverage as to the specific injury suffered during that accident policy beyond the policy term, and that you do not have to pay premiums to keep the policy in force to collect for that accident injury. Now, this is a contractual embodiment of the black letter rule. It may be narrower than the black letter rule in those cases we cited, but it is an embodiment of the black letter rule, and it continues any specific benefit that she was receiving before termination, in our estimation, continuously.
This black letter rule, if it exists at all, does apply only to accident insurance policies, correct?
Yes, it applies to an accident and health policy. And that's
so it's essential for you to establish, for us to determine, looking at this policy language as a whole, that this must fairly be characterized as an accident and health policy.
Well, our contention is that it is an accident and health policy because of the way the coverage is described and set up in there and the way they talk about injury and disease. Described as accident and health policy. But even if you want to say that it just covers medical expenses, what we are saying is that because of the benefit section which lists those benefits, that if this is just a piece of the black letter rule, that if only under this policy they've agreed in addition that as to this particular benefit existing and established at the time the policy is to terminate, they have agreed that that will be extended. And that's irrespective of what the incurred charge or the expense policy was otherwise. But we do argue that it is an accident and health policy as well. And that it should be the public policy of the state when you sell an unlimited comprehensive medical benefit as an accident and health policy, that you shouldn't then say that what your coverage really is a limited medical expense which can only be collected in the narrow window of time while the policy is in effect.
Is there a majority rule in Texas concerning whether you interpret a policy as being an accident versus an occurrence of expense policy?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Is there any majority rule in Texas concerning, if you've got any doubt about it, whether you interpret a policy as an accident versus an occurrence of expense policy?
You would interpret it, I think, to extend coverage to the insured. The broad interpretation would be a favorable one. What I'm suggesting to the court is what the Court of Appeals has done is really find an inconsistency in this policy and interpret this provision out of the policy. I don't think Mr. Jones argues anything differently. When he says what this covers is the agreement by the insurance company to pay those incurred charges which have already been established, the payment has already been, or the services have already been provided, the payment hadn't already been extended to the insured. So then continue that on into the future. They agree, they really promise to pay you those that they already owe you. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
Though you advance, as opposing counsel referenced, some strong public policy arguments for your point of view, is it correct that without even getting into the implications of this case on our current national health insurance crisis, and just looking at the terms of this contract without considering public policy one way or the other, that you argue she was covered?
That's correct. We do not rest on our public policy argument. Our public policy argument would be more important to us if we did not have this clause that embodies what we think is a piece or all of the black letter rule.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause. The court will now take a brief recess.
The audience will please rise.